In today's episode, we're going to be talking about snake drafts, the most common sort of fantasy basketball draft, talking about how to execute those. Michael Bolton.
Let's get to it.
Let's get to it indeed.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily fantasy basketball podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball Podcast, brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com and at Yahoo Sports Australia. And you can find me on Twitter as always at redrock_beeble and on Instagram at Locked On Fantasy Basketball. Today's episode is brought to you by Built Bar. Go to builtbar.com and use the promo code Locked On and you'll get 20% off your next order. As I said, we're going to be talking about snake drafts today, just a couple of pieces of business. If you are looking for leagues to join, and remember yesterday's show, I talked about the best way to set up a league. If you want to join leagues, check the link in the show notes or in the description to this, or just search up NBA Dynasty ADP on Twitter or Hidden Upside on Twitter. Matt and Brendan over there are running a whole bunch of leagues. I'm not going to be running the Red Rock leagues this year, but they are going to be running them sort of as a proxy. They've got their own leagues, but they're going to be absorbing all the Red Rock people into those leagues. So go join up there for a great set of competitive leagues and go back and check that video or audio yesterday to hear about ways to set up your league and the best way to do it, the best way in my opinion to do it. Anyway, so what we're doing today is looking at snake drafts. Now, as I said, they are the most common sort of fantasy drafts in general, whether it's fantasy football, fantasy baseball, whatever it is. Snake drafts are the most common form. They're probably not the best form. We'll talk about that in tomorrow's show. But snake drafts are definitely the most common. That doesn't mean that they're always easy to execute, or that there aren't things that we can learn, or that we may have forgotten. Because remember, it's been over a year since, a year and 3 months since we've done our mock drafts or done our competitive drafts, a little bit different to what it is usually. And it is important to refresh ourselves or, you know, think about where we may have gone wrong in drafts last year and work out the ways that we can attack these drafts with the best hope of having a winning draft. Now, a winning draft is not the be-all and end-all in a season. The waiver wire and trading is super important. It probably as important, if not more important, than a successful draft. But a successful draft starts you off really, really well. So let's have a look at some points to talk about in a snake draft. Now, this goes... most of this stuff goes for both points leagues and category leagues, although the majority of it is based on category leagues because, let's be honest, in a points league, have a look who you think is going to score more points and choose them. That is the strategy associated with choosing players in a points league draft. There's no other things to worry about team building or any bullshit like that. Just make sure you've got enough of each position and pick the player who scores the most points. That's how you get through it. So while there is some talk about points leagues in this one, and I'm going to have more of a show on points leagues probably later this week. But in terms of snake draft strategy, it's more tailored towards category leagues, whether that's a roto league or a head-to-head league. It doesn't really matter, but it is more towards categories. So let's talk about the number one thing, and I'll get this asked all the time, and it will happen this year. There's no doubt about it. It'll happen a lot of times. Josh, what are your rankings for this year? Josh, give us your top 10. Who's your top 100 rankings? Where can I see your rankings? That question will get asked all the time. And the answer that I have to that always is that rankings don't mean anything, right? That's a simplistic way of putting it, I know. But if you, and I say this all the time, unless you're in a points league draft, if you're in a category league draft, if you go into a draft with a ranking list of 1 to 150 and just pick guys off that list. Well, the next highest guy on my list is at 23, so I'll take him. And now the next highest guy is 70, so I take him. If you draft like that, you may as well just set your draft to auto draft and because you'll lose. It's as simple as that. That's not how fantasy basketball drafts work, and that's not how you should be approaching it. The way that we talk about things on Basketball Monster is we have a page that says rankings. But what that is for things that have already happened. We are ranking the performances that have already happened. So when you go to Basketball Monster and look at rankings, they are the numbers from last season. And once this season starts off, they will be the numbers from this current season that have happened. What we're talking about more is projections. We try and project what these people will do. And inherently, when you do that, they end up coming out in a list. But just because a guy is ranked 30th, It doesn't mean that the player ranked 40th is not going to be better for your particular team or your particular format or whatever is happening. That's not how it works. There are numerous factors that go into it, and it's not just about who ranks 39th versus who ranks 41st, because that is a simplistic way of looking at it. And I'm telling you now, if you draft that way, you will lose. And while you can go into Basketball Monster and you can look at my projections, you can't yet because we haven't opened it. It's coming in like a day or two. I'm telling you now, Basketball Monster projections, I'm waiting just on two teams to finish my projections off. Because they just only have like 12 guys on the roster, and it's really hard to project it out when they don't actually have a full rotation yet. So we're hoping we get that out this week. But if you go into our projections, you'll see, you know, there'll be a player ranked 1 and ranked 2 and ranked 3 in projections. But outside of probably the first round, and even then, not really, that order is not, it's not indicative of how they should be drafted. Because what we do in terms of projections, and that's how we do rankings as well, is using Z-scores, or for you Americans, Z-scores, or standard scores, as they're called. And what they do is they make, you know, maybe I should bring up the Wikipedia definition, but what they do is they make every category, because, you know, in points category, people average, you know, the 16, 17 points is an average across the fantasy league. For steals, it's like 1.1. So how do you compare someone that scores 18 points versus someone that has 1.2 steals? Which one of those is more valuable? So standard scores, or Z scores, they bring it down so that you can put a number across them so you know how far away these things are from the mean in that particular sample size. So the Wikipedia definition is the standard score is the number of standard deviations by which the value of a raw score is above or below the mean of what is being observed or measured. So for example, if 16 points is an average in a 180 player sample size, which is about what you should use, you know, everyone rostered in a standard league plus a bunch of waiver wire guys. If 16 is the average point scored by everyone there, and the standard deviation, say, is 2 points, so you might have a standard deviation of 2. So therefore, anyone who averages 18 points per game has a standard score of 1, because they are 1 standard deviation away from that average of 16. If a player scores 20 points per game, then they are 2 standard deviations away, so they have a Z score of 2 for that category, and that goes for every single category. But you see that then everyone has a score in their categories. Instead of looking at a stat line saying you average 26 and 12 with 3 assists and 2 blocks, you can see, well, I've got 1.7 in points and I've got 2 in rebounds and I've got 3.5 in blocks or whatever it is. And it enables you to compare those people between each individual category and across all categories as well, and therefore giving an overall value. All right, and that's how our overall value is determined, and that's how players end up being ranked. But as you can see, there's a lot of room for how that can not make sense for a draft, because that might be fine and someone might have this massive, massive high strength in blocks and just be absolute trash in free throw percentage and have like a +4 in blocks for their standard score and a -4 in free throw percentage, meaning that they have a net zero between those two categories. But you can come in and say, well, I don't care about free throw percentage, and look how good this guy's blocks are. And therefore, he jumps right up the rankings. But when we look at the rankings and projections, it's based on all those categories. And those two things would cancel each other out. And then that would leave you a misleading number. So I think that is important, really important, to be able to know. What's also important is it Built Bar, guys. It's back. But guess what? There's new information, because Thanksgiving Day is coming up. And I implore everybody to be safe at Thanksgiving over in the States. On Black Friday, beginning on Thanksgiving Day, Built Bar has new flavors. The all new white chocolate bar. White chocolate cookies and cream. White chocolate salted caramel. I'm going to let you in on a bit of a secret. White chocolate's my favorite chocolate. And I know people will hate that, but I love white chocolate. White chocolate cookies and cream has 130 calories, as does the white chocolate salted caramel. 17 grams of protein in both of those. While supplies last, but they are the new white Christmas white chocolate Built Bars. And with every item purchased, you get 2 free candy cane brownie bars. They're 150 calories with 17 grams of protein. So not only do you get 2 new flavors, we've also got the candy cane brownie bars as well over at Built Bar. And beginning Thanksgiving at 5 p.m., it's 25% off all products all weekend long. So go to builtbar.com and get 25% off for Black Friday. Plus, don't forget to use the promo code LOCKEDON for your extra discount. All right, so hopefully I've explained Z-scores and I've explained the difference between projections and rankings. And it's really important, especially for those who are of you who are new to Basketball Monster. If you go on the site and you click rankings and you go, rankings? What's this bullshit? Why is Steph Curry at 40? Your site's fucking fucked. Because people do that. And I understand that's not intuitive. Like that's not an intuitive thing to say because people just understand, especially from a fantasy football perspective, rankings. I'm going to rank these guys. It's based on what's happened. We're looking at projecting what these guys are going to do and looking at the individual numbers, looking at the individual Z scores, looking at the individual value of those in particular categories is way more important than who's first versus who's third. Team builds. This is what I'm talking about. So Yanni Antetokounmpo was, I'll give you a sneak peek at the moment. Again, I'm still waiting to finalize my projections. Yanni at the moment comes in at number 10. All right. Yanni, number 10, two-time MVP. What's his bullshit? He's a top three pick. Yeah, he probably is because his Z score for his free throw percentage is -3.6, right? It's huge. But you take that category out and he is a top three player. And that's why I mean team build is important when you're doing a snake draft. Now, there'll be plenty of people out here who come and tell you, and you'll read it everywhere, don't go into a draft with a punt strategy. Choose the best two available players first, and then decide after that. And while that's all well and good in theory, how are you judging that? Because if you're judging Yanni as a top three player, you're automatically then punting free throws, right? So if you aren't judging anything off a punt ranking, then he's 10th. Or I think he was 13th last year. And if you want to include turnovers, which you absolutely should never do when looking at rankings and projections, I implore you, do not do it. I will talk about this later on, but I'd implore you not to do it. If you're using that, then Yanni comes in at 13 and you know, you're going to wait for him there at 13. It's just not, it's all well and good to say pick the best two players, but it realistically it is not the way you should go into it. Now, I'm not saying you should go in and say, I'm punting free throws. I don't think you should necessarily go in and say that. But to say that you just pick the best players available, because I project this stuff and I can't tell you definitively that Luka Doncic is better than Nikola Jokic or better than Damian Lillard for this season. I can't tell you that. I might project him to be. I might project him to have a bee's dick of difference ahead of those guys. But the best player available argument, it really falls by the wayside when we don't know if that is the best player available. So you want to build a team that makes sense. There's no point drafting someone with pick number one whose name is James Harden, who may or may not be pick number one, who's got such a massive volume in free throw percentage, and then in round two, backing it up with Andre Drummond and taking away the strength of James Harden's best category by nullifying that free throw percentage. It means you can build your free throw percentage back up by all means, maybe to be the fourth best team in that category. But if you got Harden and it's the best category and he's the best impact player in that category, bar none, except actually maybe Devin Booker, who's a 90% free throw shooter, you don't want to then just completely neutralize that impact. So building your team correctly is important. Knowing what your strengths are in your team. And don't be afraid to change your punt build as well. You might come in with a free throw percentage, I'm looking pretty good. And then after five rounds, you go, well, actually, I've got like the fifth best free throw percentage out of everyone in the league. I thought I was doing better. But if I grab this guy who's a shit free throw shooter, let me find a mid-round example of a poor free throw shooter. Maybe it's Zion Williamson. Maybe it's Steven Adams in the later rounds. And you go, well, you know, I'm actually not that good in free throws. What if I grab Steve Adams here and then his field goal percentage and his rebounds actually push me to top two in those two categories? Let's make the switch. That's important to be able to do, to be able to understand how your team is built, what your strengths are, what your relative strengths and weaknesses are to the rest of the league as well, and what else is coming. And that's what we're going to talk about as well here with positional scarcity too. And that's understanding what positions are available when, because you'll see it, and it'll happen nearly always, that in rounds two and round three, and probably round four, you get a ton of point guards go off the board. You'll get guys like Lowry, Westbrook, Van Vliet, Levine, D'Angelo Russell, Donovan Mitchell, Jamal Murray, De'Aaron Fox, Ja Morant, Drew Holiday, DeJounte Murray, perhaps Malcolm Brogdon, all these guys going within a four-round, three-round period in the mid-rounds of the draft. Whereas up the top of the draft, there's not as many. And in that back end of the second round, after you get past Chris Paul, if you're even picking him there, then it's just a bunch of wings. Paul George, Bradley Beal, Jason Tatum, Kevin Durant, Andre Drummond, Jimmy Butler, Bam Adebayo, blah, blah, blah. So understanding where the positions are available, can I get a good point guard towards the end of a draft? Probably not. Can I get a solid enough three-point wing contributor? Yeah, Joe Harris will be there for me. I could get a Duncan Robinson at the end of the draft to give me some threes and to give me some wing play. I can get a center at the back end there. I could get a big man. I could try Chris Boucher. I could grab Serge Ibaka towards the end of a draft and help me out there. But there are certain positions, point guard being probably the main one, that can be hard to acquire, and even power forward to a degree there as well. But there's a lot more dual position eligibility that's happening these days. So positional scarcity, and in particular, categorical scarcity is important to note. This next point is something I've sort of touched on already, but it's value versus build. All right, so what I want to talk about here with this is by looking at a player and understanding, you know, the value in drafting. Well, this guy's got an ADP of 40. It's pick 50. And he's sitting there in my draft. He's slid. Why has he fallen so much? It's just value. I've got to take him. He's the best player available. Well, if I pick him now and the value's there, I can just trade him later. I've already got myself a small forward. So, you know, it's fine. I'll just take him and get the value on it and trade later. There's a couple of things with that. Sure, you can trade later. But if everyone in your league passed over that guy at the spot where he was allegedly supposed to go, what makes you think that there's value back in that? And I find that almost universally, that picking someone up off the waiver wire, drafting someone with the explicit intention of trading them is just not, it's hard. Trades are not that common. You'll know your league better than I know it. Some leagues are absolutely insane with trades and they do way too many. Some leagues do 3 trades a year and you have to understand what your league is like. So just grabbing value for the sake of value when it might not make any sense with your team, much like I said before, you know, grabbing a poor free throw shooter to go with a team that's stacked full of good ones, or, you know, grabbing a guy whose best category, say it's the big Frenchman, Rudy Gobert. Yeah, say in round 4, you go, oh, Gobert's there, and I had him as a top 25 player, and we're down at pick 50 here, and Gobert's available. And your team consists of Kyle Lowry, it consists of Fred VanVleet, it consists of James Harden and Trae Young. Just examples of those 4 guys. All right, so your field goal percentage is sitting at about 41 overall. You add Gobert, whose best category is field goal percentage, and you jump it up to 43, 44, and you're still not competitive. So what's the value in taking Gobert at that spot? Now, maybe you valued him for his block numbers or his rebound numbers, and that's totally fine. But if you're looking at him and go, well, he's fallen, and he'll help my field goal percentage, it's not really the best move. And you go, oh, I'll just trade him for someone later on. Again, if someone wanted him, they would have picked him. And so you might trade him for someone later on. You might trade him for the guy that you could have just picked at that spot anyway. So I find, and you guys will know this better than me in your own leagues, if it's an ongoing league, that whether trading is easy or hard, whether it's commonplace or whether it's extremely rare, you'll have a better understanding than what I do. It is important to understand your league and to do that. But in a snake draft, that is something that is worth considering. If you want to get basketball smart, it starts with listening to the Hollinger and Duncan podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. NBA analytics pioneer and front office insider John Hollinger joins Dunked On podcast host Nate Duncan to bring you scouting reports, game breakdowns, and salary cap analysis. Subscribe to Hollinger and Duncan today, wherever you get podcasts. All right, on to the next bunch of things. Actually, before I talk about this, and I'm probably going to do a whole podcast on this, but categorical scarcity is something that's really important, and that is when to draft certain categories. You can get turnovers, don't worry about it. Points, they are really concentrated at the top of a draft. All of your big-time scorers, pretty much, are in the first round to 2 rounds. Threes, you can get tons of them late. Steals, you can get quite a lot of them from like 70 to 100. Assists, they all dry up really quickly in the top 50. Rebounds, yeah, some of those go early, but you can get some of them late. Free throw percentage influences, really hard to find anyone later on to be able to do that for you. There's just no one who shoots that well or gets that much volume outside of like a Lou Williams. It's just really hard to do. Whereas field goal percentage, you can find some guys, even though they have some warts. You can grab a late round Jakob Poeltl to influence your field goal percentage. You can grab perhaps a Cody Zeller or a Jarrett Allen or a Montrezl Harrell or an Ivica Zubac later on to influence your field goal percentage. So understanding that points are hard to get early, assists go off the board, free throw percentage is tough, blocks are concentrated up high as well, whereas you can wait a bit for threes, you can wait a bit for rebounds, you can wait a bit for field goal percentage as well. The most important one of those is wait for threes. Like if you're looking at two guys who you think are pretty equal, and the differentiating factor is three-pointers, you can get those later on. You can stream the shit out of them. You can grab a bloke that's ranked 120th and get two threes per game out of him. I'm just looking at my projections at the moment. Like, you could throw in an Eric Gordon and get, you know, 2.5 threes off the waiver wire, yeah, pretty easily. Yeah, he struggles in some other areas, but there are guys that can hit threes and have, you know, decent-sized greens in their three-point projections. Yeah, Timmy Hardaway is going to be a late-round pick based on hitting threes and hitting threes only. So if you want some threes, you can add, you know, three triples a game that Tim can bring you without sacrificing it by reaching for a guy early on because he hits a shitload of threes. So I think that's, and again, that ties into overall value, because those threes get counted the same value as what assists do or as what points do in the standard score formula, even though the scarcity of them is not as high as those other ones. So that's really important to do. And I think something you should do as well, well, what you can play around with on Basketball Monster, is you can weight your categories in the rankings. So drop your three-pointers to maybe 0.8. Make your steals maybe 0.8 as well, because they influence rankings quite a bit. You just drop, and if you want to include turnovers, make them 0.7 or a 0.5 to really reduce the impact on overall rankings numbers, especially if you're going to be tied to drafting off a list. Must-have players. You'll see this all the time. It will pop up on Twitter. You'll see it on Reddit posts. Who's the one player you're not leaving your draft without? And the answer to that, much like the answer to the next question is going to be, is no one. Because again, drafting in fantasy basketball, no matter what position you're in, it's about getting value. It's about getting the player at the right spot. There are plenty of players, especially once you get out of the first couple of rounds, who are relatively interchangeable. You know, we could look at Marcus Smart or DeJounte Murray. Low scoring, decent assists, good rebounding, good defensive stats players that we can grab in those middle rounds. Right? So I have to get DeJounte Murray. So I've got to reach one round ahead to get him when I could just wait a round later and grab Marcus Smart. It's really not smart fantasy drafting. That's what I mean by, you know, watching for those must-have players. Man, I really love, you know, Jamal Murray. One of my favorite players. Like, he's got such great work on his Instagram stories. Like, love him. I've got to have him. Second round, oh, I've got to take Jamal Murray. Well, why? He might be there at pick 40. And you can get Donovan Mitchell. You can get Gordon Hayward, perhaps. You can get D'Angelo Russell 20 picks later. So while I understand that there is fun involved, hey, I want to get my favorite players. I want to get the players that play on my team. I want to get the guys who I can make a funny name out of my team. I understand that portion of it. What I'm trying to do here is talk about how to win. And if you want to win, this is what you've got to do. You've got to really avoid those must-haves. I love Luka Doncic, so I've got to pick him at pick one. Is that the smart move? Maybe. It might work out. It might not. It's about, to me, making smart moves and making value moves rather than having must-have players. Who is that player that you've got to have? This guy, massive sleeper. He's going to be such a huge sleeper this year. Really, really think, yeah, Jeremy Grant's the big sleeper. I'll happily reach into the top 50. Cool, will you? Do it. Reach, by all means. There's no point to me. Look, if he's there at the right spot and if his ADP comes in, just use Jeremy Grant for an example. If his ADP comes in at 120 and you've got him ranked as the 70th best player, then you take him at pick 70 and you're winning already. But if you take him at pick 90, you're winning even more. But if you go, well, someone else might grab him at 80 or grab him at 70, then I've got to get him at 50, then what are you doing with it? Like, why are we making this a thing. So must-have players, just scratch that idea from your mind. You can look at it and go, well, at this point in the draft, I'd love it if this guy was available. And reaching up one round is fine. There's no problem with that. But it's when you go, I've got to give this guy and reach 30 spots to go and get a player because you think he's going to have a breakout. Well, you've just pissed all over that breakout potential because you've taken the value away from it. And the same thing goes for the next point, and that's do not draft players. Mate, never drafting Kawhi Leonard. Never, never. Forget it. Not happening. Not drafting him. Blake Griffin? What are you talking about? As if I'm drafting that dickhead. No way. He's injured all the time. Never drafting him. Oh, I drafted, let's get an example. I drafted Otto Porter last year at pick 45. That guy's a bum. No way. Never drafting him. And then there's 11 other blokes in your league who say the same thing. And you're sitting there at pick 80 and Otto Porter's there and you go, but I said I'd never draft him, so I probably shouldn't. So be aware again of a do not draft list. Hey, do not draft at ADP by all means. But writing a bloke off because you had him last year and he didn't live up to your expectations is another way to lose. I think a player like Otto Porter is a great example, to be honest, because he was never healthy last year. He could comfortably be a top 50 player again. I don't think he will be, because I think they'll probably limit his minutes somewhat again, but he could easily be a top 50 player again this year. And if he's sitting there staring at me at pick 90, I'll take him. But because he was such a disappointment last year to me and to many others, I'm not just going to avoid him for that. Because again, it's a losing strategy. Having guys that you're locked in that you must draft and guys that you're avoiding at all costs is pointless. I'm not taking Ben Simmons because he screwed a Kardashian or a Jenner or whoever it was. Okay, I understand where you're coming from. But is that, again, we're trying to work and build winning fantasy teams here. Not... and there is absolutely nothing wrong with how you want to play your fantasy. If you want to play it based on drafting a bunch of players who have all had sex with Kardashians, then by all means, build that team. I'm not to stop. If you want to build a team based on all white players, it's a bit weird, but do it. If you want to build a team based on everyone whose name starts with S, do it. If that's how you have fun with it, this is what this game is. It's fun. What I'm trying to do is give you the best strategies to win and be competitive and have fun while doing it as well. Because let's be honest, some of the shit that I say on this show is for comedic purposes only. But I'm trying to give you winning strategies here as well. Weekly leagues versus daily leagues. What's your league? Work it out. Understand what it is. If you don't know what it is, you're going to have a real problem when you get into the draft. Because in a weekly league, as you know, at the start of the week, you set your lineup. So players who are likely to get injured, players who could rest games, they're much less valuable in a weekly change league because you put a guy in who's constantly getting hurt. Shout out to the Italian cock.
Hands off my cock!
What team does he play for? The Hawks have four games this week. Gallinari, lock him in. And then he gets hurt and he misses two of them. There's a lot more risk there with him, with Kawhi, with Embiid, with any of these players. Now, you can't predict injuries, but you can predict Blake Griffin. You can predict guys that are probably going to miss more than usual, Chris Paul. And their value goes down in a weekly changes league versus a daily changes league. Whereas in a daily changes league, if they miss a game where you can put someone on your bench and chuck them in or add a waiver wire guy or whatever, in a weekly changes league, you're screwed. You can't do that. That's why I don't like weekly changes league. And it's going to be super important this year with COVID as well, to make sure that you have daily versus weekly. But your drafting strategy does change a little bit. The next thing that's important as well is percentage changes. This is what I mean by this is that players, one of the biggest things that causes players to bust or break out is weird percentage changes. Look at what Brandon Ingram did last year. He shot 20 plus percentage points better from the free throw line. His 3-point volume almost tripled. His field goal percentage and 3-point percentage was strong. Like, these are things that are not predictable. And that is often how you can get these type of players who jump up. But what is important is to look at players who saw their percentages, whether it was free throw percentage, 3-point percentage, field goal percentage, drop or rise significantly last season. Or, for example, in the bubble. Because those things have big influences over fantasy value. So, often ways to find value is to look for those players who had weird almost inexplicable drops in their shooting numbers. Why did you shoot 12 percentage points less? And I think a name for to look at is someone like Danny Green, who I think was like a 60% free throw shooter last year. Now, he's not a great fantasy option, but why did he shoot 60? Well, I'm getting his numbers up now. Why did he shoot, you know, such a small percentage? He shot, you know, 69%.
Giggity!
He was at 84 the year before that. On, you know, similar attempts, 48 versus 44, and that's the thing with Green, it's like such low volume. But, yeah, he made just four fewer free throws and had four more attempts, and it makes him go from 84 to 69. Now, that's a weird example because of the difference in their the volume. But Green also went from a 46% three-point shooter to a 37% three-point shooter. I'm not saying he's going to be a 46% three-point shooter again, but could he be a 40% guy, a 39% guy? Could he be an 80% free throw shooter? Very easily. And there are examples like that littered right across the league of guys who were quite good shooters that had weird down years in their shooting percentage numbers, or guys had a big jump up. We saw Jamal Murray and Donovan Mitchell in the bubble shoot numbers absolutely out of their ass. That's probably not going to continue. So do you bank on that or not? Brook Lopez, for example, from three went from 37% down to 31. Is he a 31% three-point shooter? Or is he 37? Because that difference, really, when you look at Brook's numbers, he was a 51%, so he was the 51st ranked player in 18-19. He was 65th in 19-20, averaging 12 points, 4.5 rebounds, 2 blocks, 0.7 steals, 1.5 assists. The numbers are the same. The difference is he hit 0.8 threes fewer, and his field goal percentage went from 45 to 43. Realistically, and his 2-point percentage dropped from 62 to 55 as well, so just everything on his shooting just dropped. If those things bounce back at all, then he goes, you know, those numbers go back up pretty comfortably. So that's what I mean by looking at percentage changes. It's also important to remember that in-season percentage changes. You have a three-game cold streak and the player looks like trash. You have a three-game hot streak where you're shooting 58% from three. Oh, the best player ever. That's where sell highs and buy lows come in. But looking at players who had weird, inexplicable drops, and I'll do a podcast on this at some point, the players who had big changes in their field goal percentage, free throw percentage, or three-point percentage, is a good way of being able to establish whether someone might be in for a drop-off or might be in for a bounce-back. And taking that into consideration in your drafts is important. Another question that people will ask quite a bit is, you know, what's the best spot to draft from? Now, I haven't done all of the projections yet, but as usual, there is a big value drop-off after the first couple of guys in the draft versus the next group of players. And without giving the names away yet, okay, because I haven't finished this yet, but in terms of overall value difference, we're talking about a 0.36 value difference between number four and number one. And then the next, if you want to go 0.36 down, it's between number 4 and number 15. So a big gap there. And then another 0.36 down takes you from number 15 all the way down to number 41. So the difference between 1 and 4 is the same as the difference between 4 and 15, which is the same as the difference between 15 and 41. So there is that advantage, is what I'm trying to say, that advantage up the top. Another thing with reaches as well, if you are picking at 1 or 2 or 11 or 12, or the start or the end of a draft, reaching is a little bit more acceptable because you pick at pick number 12, then you pick at 13, and then you don't pick again until pick number 36. So you got like 24 spots to wait before you pick again. So if there's a guy that you want and these guys' value are all relatively closely bunched up and you want to take him at 13 because you're not picking again until 36, then that is a little bit more of a sensical play. I think in general, you probably want to be, I said those top three separate themselves, and then the next two guys are pretty close, and then the next four or five guys are pretty close. I don't mind picking in that. I think six is probably is a good spot because A, it's in the middle of the round, and your pick just comes back to you at a consistent time every round, so it enables you to get a handle on what's going on. If there's a run on certain players, you can, you know, make moves to correct that. So I think picking at five or six or even seven is probably going to be the right spot. And in that area, you're looking at Damian Lillard, probably Luka Doncic, Trae Young, maybe Steph's in that area. If you go late, a bit later than that, like eight or nine, then you're talking about, oh, do I want to risk Kawhi Leonard? Do I look at Joel Embiid? Do I look at LeBron, who might rest? Do I look at Kyrie in that area? Do I take the risk that Yusuf Nurkic continues his bubble form? Like, that's sort of when you're looking at that back end. So I think the, you know, four, five, six, anywhere in that top six is a good spot to draft. I like the 5-6 range a little bit better because it does enable me to pick back in the middle of that second round. And if you're looking at players, same as, you know, even if you're looking, well, I'm going to pick 1, 2, or 3. I've got an offer to trade from 1 down to 3. And you go, well, I don't see huge separation between those guys. Take the lower pick because it means you pick earlier in the next round. And that can be important as well. Picking at 22 versus 24 might be a little bit more important to you. The same as, you know, well, 4, 5, and 6, I've got all those guys really close. Now, whoever those players are, is it Davis, Towns, Curry, Lillard, Doncic, Jokic, Giannis, like whoever those guys are, I've got them all really close between 3 and 7. Take 7. Because you'll get at least one of those guys. There's the striation in the value of those players. I'll get one of them. And then I'll pick earlier again in round 2. So look at my projections when they come out. Work it out yourself versus how you want to look at this in terms of punting. Are you putting Giannis and Doncic up higher because of the punt value? Are you using -1 numbers, which I think is a good way to do it? And by -1, I mean taking all of those players' standard scores for those categories and taking away their worst one, and that gives you a really strong idea. And I think that's a good way of establishing a first round as well, is taking away a player's worst category and looking at it from a first round perspective that way. And then looking at games played, who's going to miss, who's going to sit games, and using a combination of total value and per game value with some -1 ranks, and then work out, you know, where you have those guys slotted and where are your tiers in that area, and then picking the lowest one of a tier you're more comfortable with so that in the other rounds you get a better result. So I reckon that'll do it for me today. Tomorrow I'll be back to talk about auction drafts, talking about how to succeed in an auction draft, which can be pretty daunting for people, but don't be scared. In the end, it's unbelievably fun, and it is pretty easy when you get the hang of it. We're going to talk about that tomorrow, guys. Don't forget, subscribe, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, and on YouTube. Guys, we are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.